This month features 2 North, Durazzo, Lisa Vasquez, and more, and is a benefit for KBOO. Again, that's Thirsty City, Wednesday, October 26th, 8:30 p.m. at The No, 2026 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud media co-sponsor of Mama C, Global Panther, at An Other Words Bookstore, October 29th, that's Saturday, October 29th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. This event is all ages and open to the public. Who is Mama C? Mama C is a singer, songwriter, poet, traditional African instrumentalist, a revolutionary, former Black Panther, mother, healer, and educator. Come hear her incredible story of political exile and how she tours the world now, supporting revolutionary movements for human rights and social justice, inspiring and invigorating many people. Again, that's Mama C, Global Panther, Saturday, October 29th at In Other Words Bookstore, 14 Northeast Killingsworth, 6 p.m., all ages.
Next up on KBOO is the Recovery Zone with Stephanie Potter. It's 11 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Today, Stephanie Potter will speak with Chad Brown, founder of Soul River Runs Wild, about that program and how it promotes healing and conservation. And he is bringing a guest with him named Tyrell Hall. That's all coming up soon. Listen to a couple more announcements, and then we'll get right to the Recovery Zone with Stephanie Potter. Thanks for tuning into KBOO today, and thanks for becoming a member at kboo.fm on the web.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Intersex and PDX. Bring the Fire, Wednesday, October 26th at 5 p.m. at the Q Center in Portland. Intersex Awareness Day is October 26th, and this benefit concert will feature local Portland artists and performers to tell this patriarchy what's up. Again, that's Intersex and PDX. Bring the Fire, Wednesday, October 26th at 5 p.m. at the Q Center, 4115 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dia de los Muertos PDX 2016, Wednesday, November 2nd, from noon to 11 p.m. at Audio Cinema in Portland. This annual celebration of the Day of the Dead honors our loved ones who have passed. There will be altars, music, face painting, food, drinks, and more. Again, that's Dia de los Muertos PDX 2016, Wednesday, November 2nd, from noon to 11 p.m. at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Also, by the Skyline Tavern Project, a not-for-profit historic saloon at the edge of Forest Park, dedicated to supporting art and ecology through live music, food, and horseshoes. 8031 Northwest Skyline Boulevard and skytav.com. And we're going to go back to the theme for the Recovery Zone.
Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is The Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. This month's show is about an organization called Soul River Runs Wild. It's a nonprofit that provides, or it teams up actually, veterans with disadvantaged youth and introduces them to the joys of fishing. And it also helps to cultivate a reverence for nature and a passion for conservation. My guests are still on their way here, so I expect them to be here any second. But meanwhile, we're going to play you a brief little video that's on their website that gives you a sense of what their trip was like to the Owyhee Canyonlands. And why don't we just let that roll, and then hopefully they're going to be here. Okay, thanks. Like a river, like a river.
Things about the river, like how it flows, different spots in the river.
This area does deserve to be protected and help to set it as it is today, because to keep it as it is now and help it not get destroyed or anything.
Thank you.
The Owyhee made me feel really happy. I had a lot of fun fishing and spending time with people here.
Absolutely believe this place needs to be preserved and kept wild. I mean, it's hard to, living in the city to find somewhere where you can escape and truly be out in wilderness and out in nature and be able to connect with the natural environment and not see, highways and buildings. And I mean, you can't even get cell service out here, and that's fantastic. That's truly disconnecting from the plugged in world that we live in. And you can really come out here and reconnect and recenter yourself and rebalance.
From youth, from veterans, from people all around that have come together, for this one cause to have the opportunity to fish, to be on the water. I mean, this is a very, very sensitive area that you don't find anywhere else in the state of Oregon, let alone, potentially the rest of the United States. So, yeah, I think culturally, recreationally, this area is definitely worth being protected.
Hi, Stephanie Potter back here again. That was a little introduction to a thing called, it's a nonprofit called Soul River Runs Wild. And we're still waiting for Chad Brown. We're still waiting for a teenager that is a participant in this program. His name is Tyrell. Oh, you're here. Tyrell Hall. Ha! Thank goodness. Okay, that might be hard. So Tyrell, why don't we get started just with having you sit down and get by a microphone and we can get going. Tyrell was deployed, as they say, to Alaska this summer. And he was able to, I guess, do a lot of stuff up there. They took a whole crew of veterans and they took a whole crew of kids and just went to Alaska to find out what was going on up there in terms of climate change, what was going on in terms of glacier melt and fishing, because that's really what this is really all about, right, Tyrell?
Yeah.
Okay, so Tyrell, you can get right close to that microphone and give us... So what got you started with being part of Soul River?
Well, my mom told me about it, and she said she knew Chad Brown, and she introduced me to him, and I was like, that's awesome that we get to go outdoors and everything. So I was very interested.
Uh-huh. And what was your first trip?
The Arctic.
The Arctic. So that was your first and your last, I guess, at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go again?
Yes.
Oh, so what was it like for you? What did you do?
We studied conservation and climate change.
And how did you do that exactly? What do you mean climate change?
Chad and all the other vets were scheduling us classes every day. And they had education from Stanford and NASA that was combined, and they taught us little lessons on conservation and how we could protect the wildlife refuge.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah. And so you were actually learning from NASA scientists and stuff. Did you know much about climate change before you'd gone up there?
I knew a little gist of it, like from school and everything, but not as much as I learned.
Not as much as you learned, right. Yeah. Has it changed you a lot, do you think? I mean, in terms of how you want to react to things like that or deal with things like that now as you get older?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to talk about that more, but I also want to talk about the fact that you were probably fishing, right? I mean, isn't that part of what you're also doing with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was mostly catch and release, because they wanted to teach us how the more we release, we can like follow the circle of life of the fish and how some of the salmon runs are like dying because of climate change.
Right.
And like trash and everything.
Trash in the ocean and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you learned a lot just about what's going on. And so what's so great about fishing exactly? Like, did you like it, I guess?
Yeah, I loved it.
You loved it.
I've always bait fished, but I've never fly fished. And being out in the water in the middle of like nowhere, like no cell service or anything, just like really like opens you and it's like free.
Really?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Like, out of the local perspective.
Yeah.
No cell phone.
Nobody can get a hold of you.
No.
I want to tell you, I don't have a cell phone, partly for that very reason.
Oh. Yeah.
I like being out of touch.
That's awesome.
But anyway, so you have no cell phone, you're out of touch, and there's a sense of real freedom in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's very good to know.
Mm-hmm.
And did you build campfires?
Yes.
Was it cold?
It was cold, yeah. Especially at night.
At night. And what did you do around the campfire? Did you guys tell stories or talk? Or?
Well, I found out really quickly I don't like bears. But they told, like, sometimes we did lessons at night. And also we taught, like, what we're going to be doing for the next day and, like, safety rules and everything.
Safety rules, bears. And did you run into any bears or did you run into any animals like that?
Well, after the Arctic trip, we went to Alaska, the Kenai Peninsula,
mm-hmm.
and the wildlife refuge, and we stayed in these old cabins.
Yeah.
And one night, I woke up at like 2 a.m, and there was a grizzly bear outside my window.
Oh, you're kidding.
I was scared to death. Yeah.
What do you do in that situation? What was your education on that?
Well, we weren't outside, everyone in my cabin was asleep and it was pitch black, but I could kind of see, I can make out how it was a grizzly. It was huge.
Wow.
So like, I just stayed silent and Chad was in my cabin also.
Oh, wow.
And his service dog. And I found out that bears are afraid of dogs.
Oh, good.
So the dog scared it away.
So the dog barked, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it ran off.
Yeah.
Okay, so you survived a grizzly bear in Alaska,
yes.
Tyrell. So when you get back to school and you're telling your friends about this, what mm-hmm. are they thinking?
It's really hard to like share like my experience with my friends because they didn't experience it with me.
Yeah.
So like they don't know what to feel and how to react to it, but they're like, wow, it's crazy that you encountered a bear.
Yeah, I can bet.
Yeah.
And what was it like? I mean, do you feel like it's changed you in some fundamental ways? Like when you applied to get into this program, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking more about in terms of everything?
I was thinking about like having like a lot of fun outdoors.
Yeah.
But now I kind of like found the path where I want to go with my education.
Uh-huh.
So I want to be an ornithologist now.
An ornithologist?
Yeah.
Okay, what's an ornithologist? That's birds?
Yeah, birds.
Cool. Okay. So Tyrell is going to grow up to be, and I think we have Chad here who's unloading all his backpacks and things, and eventually he's going to walk into the studio with us. And so anyway, you're going to become an ornithologist, and you're just on that track now, basically. Mm-hmm. And this has really done that to you.
Yeah.
Great. That's great. Okay, Chad, we got to have you sit down and get by a microphone, and I got to start asking you some questions. I'm here. Chad is a little bit late, but better late than never. And I'm Stephanie Potter. This is the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. We're talking with Tyrell Hall. I had a different name for you, Tyrell Hall. And Chad Brown. And Chad Brown is a fellow who started an organization called Soul River Run Wild. If you are interested in talking about this issue at all, he's actually used Soul River Run Wild to team up veterans with teens. And they go out on expeditions where they go fly fishing or camping or learning about science. And if you want to call in, you can call in with your questions or comments. The phone here at KBOO is 503-231-8187. So, Chad, welcome. And if you could just get your mouth a little closer to the mic, great. Yeah, right. Very close. So, where were you?
I was in the Owyhee Canyonlands. I just got back probably like an hour and a half ago.
Oh.
And so I was down there shooting a film dealing with the protection of the Owyhee Canyonlands conservation with King Shoes, Ibex, and Osprey Packs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a noble enough reason to be late to this.
Yeah,
that's okay. And so I want to talk to you about your own background. You started all of this basically after you had gone through some real serious issues yourself, right?
Right.
Like, could you tell a little bit about what that was or what happened to you?
Yeah, sure. Probably, I would say maybe 6-7 years ago, I was in a really, really dark place. And moving out to Oregon, things were a little different coming from New York, and so I think the change, the environment kind of put me in a different place, and it caused my mind to relapse and go back into the past from war, serving in the military, and a lot of stuff started to come out of me, a lot of mm-hmm. demons and stuff that I started fighting and didn't really know what was going on, but as slowly as I'm moving forward, living here in Oregon, started losing everything, basically. Losing, everything from, when I mean everything, different pieces of me, I just start losing everything where I can't even hold a job down.
Couldn't hold a job.
Yeah. And so when that happened, I got to a place in my life that I never thought I was going to see myself, in a place like that. Eventually a friend of mine showed me how to get, connecting to the VA hospital. And I started going through this process with doctors and psychologists, et cetera, and dealing with everything from anxiety, depression. I was strung out on medications, fighting that left and right. Found myself on the water, almost about to commit suicide, spend times in and out of blood banks, trying to draw blood to put gas in my rig to make it from point A to point B. And, you know, and that was my life. You know, that was my life at that time. I was just fighting just the darkest of dark of demons from my past.
And your past had included, you said, war. I mean, you had been a veteran deployed, like, where?
I was, I served in the U.S. Navy. I'm a vet. I was in Operation Restore Hope, Somalian campaign, and also Operation Desert Storm as well. Did two tours. I spent
Desert Storm. Wow.
Yes, ma'am. And I traveled and been in a lot of different third world type of hot issues throughout 14 different countries. As long as I stayed in the United States, was no more than 4 months of my entire Navy career, basically.
Wow.
You know, and so we...
And how many years was this that you were doing this thing?
This was 4 years straight.
Wow.
4 years straight. And so it was pretty intense in my life. It was a chapter that I closed, but that chapter reopened itself later
in
my life.
Portland.
Yeah, it did, you know. And, you know, so to move forward, I just continued on that path, and a friend of mine put a fly rod in my hand as I was going in and out of the VA hospital and took me to the water and said, this is what, here, I used to come here to deal with my issues and stuff, uh-huh. You know. And so I came through the river and I said, well, how do you get into that? And they took me up to a fishing shop right behind, exactly where we was at, actually, at the river. And, you know, I bought a rod and reel and went out there and started fishing, you know. And I hooked in on my first fish, and I was hooting and hollering left and right, you know. I was excited, and, you know, and at that time, I literally felt like the medication, that all that meds that I was taking, it was just oozing out of me because I was so happy, you know. And I felt like alive and in the present. And so that basically, I mean, a no-brainer, fundamentals, 1+1, I just made that connection dots. Like, you know what? This makes me feel good. And this is what I want to do. I took that to the VA hospital, talked to the docs. They didn't turn me away from that. They supported that.
Good.
And they said, you know what? As long as you continue on with your group therapies and one-on-one therapies, fly fish.
Oh,
you
cool.
know, and that's really what it was. And so that's what I did and continued on rebuilding myself, retooling myself, making new friends on the water, relearning how to appreciate where I'm at and also appreciate my environment, basically.
There's one story in all this, though, that where I saw on the web a fish had actually come after you or something on the Sandy River. Could you tell us
yeah,
about that?
Yeah. I was that was a little bit after coming out of the VA hospital after I attempted to take my life. You know, it was probably like a month or 2 months later, but I found myself on the river. And I hear these stories because I spend a lot of times in the fly fishing shops and hearing all these older anglers, you know, and they're talking about the big fish they caught, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there was this opportunity that came up because I heard there was a salmon run, you know, and I didn't know anything what to do about, you know, chasing a salmon and stuff. And so I get out there and I hooked in and he broke my line. And he did that three times, you know. And so the fourth time I hooked in, and this time I got it, and I was hooting and hollering all across the water. And then that salmon turned around and started coming at me like a Mack truck, you know. And I looked at that salmon, and I put down my rod, and I run the opposite direction, you know.
Right.
And you know, and so that was my first engagement of connecting with the salmon, you know. And that's,
so there's this guy charging up the river, running away from a salmon, I guess. And how did the fishermen react to that when they saw you?
They thought I was nuts. They thought I was nuts, you know.
Right,
and so they were just laughing and said, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm trying to catch a salmon. He said, well, you don't run away from a salmon, you know, and everything, you know. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But one friend that you made from that was a fellow named Brian Chow.
Yeah.
And he ended up really helping you do more fishing. And
absolutely,
stuff like
yeah. Brian Chow, he is an he's like a brother, you know. He's a friend. He's a brother to me, and he spent a lot of time with me on the water, retooling and teaching me, you know, the ethics of being an angler. You know, how to read the water and understand where you're at. You know, and so I look at my relationship at times, sometimes with Brian, it's almost kind of like that Jedi, you know, Yoda and Jedi, basically, you know. Cool. And so I had all the time in the world, and when he had the time available, we would connect on the water, and we would spend time on the water. And a lot of it wasn't really about fishing. It was about just having that awesome, rich conversation about life, basically, you know. Yeah. And so that was a medicine, another form of medicine to the right. soul, basically, you know.
Friendship.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And so through his connections, build more friends, you know. Right. And so Brian, he's with me everywhere I go, basically, even though he's doing his thing. But everywhere I go, the things I'm doing, the teaching, what I'm doing out in the outdoors today, even with the youth, et cetera, there's a lot of Brian that's coming out of me, cool. basically, you know. But yeah.
Too bad he couldn't have been here, too. And how about you, Tyrell? When you first caught a fish, were you hooping and hollering? Was it really that thrilling?
Yeah, it was awesome. It's hard to explain.
It's hard to explain. I know. See, like, I look at fishing, I think wet, cold, hours of standing in a river. What's so great about it? But you guys have a whole different take on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with fly fishing, you throw the fish back. What's that about?
It's catch and release, basically, you know, and it's really respecting the fish, respecting where you're at. It's the sport. You know, the idea behind that basically is like, you know, you're there for the sport, you give it back to the river, and you have the opportunity to be able to come back to the river again and enjoy that experience instead of taking from the river, basically, you know. And so it's just appreciating the water. The river gave you the opportunity to hook in on this beautiful species, and you know, and now it's time to let it go, basically. Say your thank you and goodbyes and take your picture and let them go, basically.
Yeah. I like that. I love animals. Fish are happy. Yeah, you're happy. Exactly. It's all good. But do you end up eating fish when you're out there?
You know, on our deployments that we do.
And you call them deployments, right?
Yes. Yeah. We call them deployments. And on our deployments, you know, we do practice harvesting at certain times, basically. You know, when it's a longer deployment, heavy expedition away from home, there is a practice that we will harvest to eat, basically. Uh-huh. And the youth had an opportunity, and Tyrell had an opportunity up in the Arctic on our last deployment to eat some, was it?
Arctic char.
Yeah.
Arctic char.
So good.
Yeah.
It was good, huh? Charred char, huh? Yeah. And how long were you up there, Tyrell? How long did that last?
I think like a week, I think.
Yeah. A week. Yeah, yeah.
And how many went along with you? How many of there? There were veterans and volunteers and kids, right?
Mm-hmm. There's four other kids.
Yeah.
And how many veterans?
It was four. It was, yeah, it's a total, actually it was a total of 14. Was it four or five?
Kids?
Yeah.
Including me, five.
Right, gotcha. It's okay. Total five, and then we had four, it was four veterans, and then a guide, basically. Wow. Yeah.
And there's a whole lot I want to get into, actually, about what Soul River Run Wild.
Yeah.
So you, and we'll probably just do that in the next little bit here, but basically, so you turned your life around, basically, by finding fly fishing. How did this whole Soul River thing start to come about then? I mean...
Sure. You know, it's kind of interesting. When I was in the... I was being interviewed in the Waihi Canyonlands just a couple of days ago, and the same kind of thing kind of was brought up, and one of the directors, you know, it was kind of like off the grid. We're having this conversation, and he was like, you know, he put this together. It's like, you know, you almost, you know, took your life on the water, but actually, you know, you find yourself back on the river, where the river is kind of like an opportunity. It's like a rebirth, basically, you know. And that's kind of like that whole process I went through, where I almost exit the world, but I found myself back on the water, where it's actually given me life, you know. And so
the waters of life.
Exactly, you know. And so when I was out back on the river, it gave me strength. You know, there was a time it gave me this intense strength, and I felt like I was, you know, excuse me, I don't know if I curse not on radio, but I felt like I was ready to kick some ass and get back into society. And so was, you know, I was strong, I was ready, and it gave me that, I would say that that life, you know, to start marching forward, basically. And I connected the soul and I connected river, and I just came up with Soul River, you know. And I said, this is an opportunity that I want to be able to, when I get back into society, I want to be able to reach out and connect with youth, especially youth of color in the inner city, basically, and also veterans, basically, that are fighting PTSD and TBI, and bring these both demographics together, and where a veteran serves a youth, gives that youth an opportunity as a big brother, big sister, a guide, and that youth basically give us vets a purpose.
Uh-huh.
A purpose to live, yeah. Basically. You know, it, that's what it gives us.
That's what you're doing, Tyrell.
You know, yeah.
Okay, I want to let listeners know again, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter. This is the Recovery Zone, and my guests are Chad Brown, founder and president of Soul River. And he's got Soul River Runs Deep and Soul River Runs Wild. And teen participant Tyrell Hall. And Chad himself is a veteran who's diagnosed, as we know, with post-traumatic stress disorder. If you want to call in, you can give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so basically then you've hooked up veterans with teens. And how does that actually work? Like, so do you have, Tyrell, your own veteran that you hang out with now or something? Or
Well... they kind of introduce us to all of them,
uh-huh.
And we build like really close relationships with all of them.
Yeah.
So basically, all of us are kind of united.
So you're connected to all the five veterans that you were with, and the
mm-hmm.
the five teens. So do you guys end up meeting a lot afterward, or connecting afterward, or?
Yeah, on other trips, and when we reunite as a group.
Uh huh. And how does that go? Or the reunions?
Tyrell, go ahead if you want
to. They go good. It's kind of cool hanging out of the Arctic.
Yeah. Like, oh, you call it the out of the Arctic group.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, the Arctic was really cool, how all of us, like, became, like, really close. Like, it was awesome.
Yeah. And you probably started out, like, not even knowing anybody, right? And then by the end, you were just, like, all practically brothers.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, but there were some girls, I hope, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, there was. Yeah. Yes.
And do you plan on getting together more through the year?
Yeah.
And going on more expeditions or deployments, as it were?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so... So there's like survival skills, there's community, there's teamwork, outdoor leadership. How are some of these things taught to the kids? How does that go?
When we are on our deployments, we have it's laid out in curriculum form, and the curriculum form is based on the groups of threes or fours, basically.
Uh-huh.
And within those groups, it's a mix of youth and vets, basically.
Uh-huh.
Usually it's 3-1 or 2-1, and we'll have either three, if we have three youth in one group, there'll be one vet or two vets, and also we have a volunteer. And each group will be assigned with a certain part of the curriculum, and the vets will use that curriculum to start teaching, basically. A lot of the vets that ends up coming into the fold and engaging with the educational piece, a lot of them already have that skill set, you know. And so I tend to tap into a lot of their skill sets, like, you know, reading river navigation and compass, wilderness navigation, and also conservation, you know. And so,
which is a huge part of this, isn't it?
It's a big part. It's a very big part, you know. And so that's all integrated. And so where some scenarios you have the veteran basically that's acting as the teacher, the mm-hmm. educator, and channeling through the youth. And sometimes I will have a volunteer. And if it's a volunteer, I really try to look for volunteers from a professional background. A good example, like a scientist, educator, someone from that type of background, to where they can bring that professionalism into the fold.
Cool.
So that gives the youth an opportunity to see if they take interest into this, there's a bridge here that they can make that connection with, and they can be able to say, hey, you know what do you have to do this? And that volunteer and also the veteran can say, well, this is what you have to do to do this, and I can make some phone calls and I can help you with that. And so it's kind of like one part education and one part kind of pivoting, you know, and giving opportunity to the youth to see that there's many different directions you can go if this is something that you want to do. This is available, and there's adults here that can connect you to what you want to do, basically.
And Tyrell here is saying that you wanted to be an ornithologist. What got you interested in that?
When I was younger, I wanted to be a pilot. Like, I liked the aerodynamics and flying.
It's all about flying for you.
Yeah, and then birds, like...
I love birds.
Yeah, Tyrell, it was also my first time going to the Arctic, but I must say,
there's
being
a lot of
in
birds
the outdoors,
up there.
You know, well, there is, but what was interesting that Tyrell is very over the top, deeply into birds. And cool. So I got pictures and I was like, wow, I've never seen a kid especially bring his books into the outdoors, you know. And then you got the birds, and so we're in the Arctic Circle and Tyrell opened up his books. He got like 3 books of birds, you know. And, you know, and he's like, you know, he's telling everybody, he can identify them and everything. I've actually learned a lot, you know, from him. But yeah, he's deeply into birds. The study of birds. Yeah, absolutely.
And the going off to be an ornithologist, you've sort of got like figured out how you're going to make that happen then, huh?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. That's it's incredible. And so, and then you guys were keeping like scientific journals.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Yes.
And you were studying the impacts of climate change. How were you seeing the climate change happening there? What were you seeing?
I'll let Tyrell answer that one.
We saw like a lot of permafrost when we flew over the Arctic.
Yeah.
And like a lot of stuff we saw out there, we could see how humans are speeding up the process of like the natural like atmosphere.
Yeah.
And when I was out there learning about climate change, I kind of found a way to where I could teach like others in my classes about how we need to protect our like Earth, because we were always learning about industrial revolution and technology and everything,
right.
But we always forget about how the more technology and industrial stuff we make, the more damages we can impact the Earth with.
Right.
So, like, there's permafrost out there, which was frozen over on the soils of the lands, and that was a terrible deficit on the animals, like the caribou. They could get stuck in it, break their leg, and die, basically.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
terrible.
Yeah. So, yeah. Your heart goes out that way, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, I did see, like, on your website that, for instance, one of the students, when he returned home from one of these deployments, he pitched to his high school president to start a new student organization called ECO. That was you, Tyrell?
That's Tyrell.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So, and you're finding that kind of thing is happening with the students that go?
A lot of the students that comes back are doing many interesting different things now, you know, in their own way. Tyrell pursued, and he could speak more about that, you know, going to high school and starting his own eco-revolutionary club, you know.
Love it.
We have a, you know, young lady that, you know, which is awesome. Her name is Riley, and she was in this science, I think, you know, this science club. Entered as a freshman, basically, and she got advanced to advanced science, basically, just by her coming back, basically, you know.
Oh, wow.
You know, and, you know, another young lady he's become very conscious of Kobe, and I remember she's connecting with her mom, and I don't know how old her mom is, but at her age, she's just now learning how to recycle. You know,
uh-huh.
And Kobe's teaching her this, you know, and also bringing that conservation mindset into the family, basically, and being more conscious, you know. But all of the youth have turned into leaders. I mean, you ask the vets that was there, actually, maybe probably the word youth and kids is really not used. They're actually using like, these are my brothers and my sisters.
Wow.
You know, it's really amazing the change that we was able to witness. But these you know, Tyrell and everybody who came back, they are young leaders, and they have really some interesting strengths of insight on each one of them that makes them unique, that they've been able to bring back to the community and share.
And how do you select people? I mean, how does it, like, I know this is all free, right? Like,
yeah.
the kids, the vets, uh-huh. They don't pay a cent to do these
right.
deployments.
Right.
How are they selected? How does that work?
It's right now it's an application process,
uh-huh.
you know, and it opens up early every January at the beginning of the year, and it closes in March. And then on my board members, there's a committee through the board members, which is a application committee,
mm-hmm.
a group of 10, and they review each application according to each deployment that we're doing, basically. And once when those are reviewed, there's interviews that are taking place, there's phone calls taking place, and of course for every deployment, there's these pre-classes that we start to have, and we engage with the parents, we engage with the youth, and we start to make our selections through that process. The board, the committee board, you know, gives me, you know, their selects, and then I would look at them and make those final calls, basically, you know,
wow.
And that's how it is. For the bigger deployments that we do, those require, you know, a couple deployments, smaller deployments to build up to that, basically.
Uh-huh.
You know, we just don't take you straight from here to the Arctic. You know,
right.
You got to go through a couple deployments, basically, and you build up from that, basically. But yeah.
So you build up like this, but it's kids that basically wouldn't have gotten out into the country at all, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like inner city kids from, are there kids that you would actually reject, though, because they're just too troublesome for you or
no,
something?
No, I haven't came across that challenge yet.
Uh-huh.
The doors are open for every kid. The doors are open for every vet. On my deployments, I do have a therapist that comes out with me, basically. The therapist is also part of that committee, and she reviews and gives her recommendations, et cetera.
Right.
But there's no red flags. It's just that if this kid is having a certain issue, then it's a matter of us sitting down, talking with the parent, and trying to understand a little bit much more in depth about what's happening here. So then we can basically make that decision to see if we can accommodate or not, basically, you know.
Right.
But right now we treat everything as an open door, and really it takes the passion and desire and interest for that youth to wants to come out and get connected to the world. And that's in the organization Soul River Inc., and that's what it's about. It's really about giving opportunity to inner city youth of all race, basically, where they don't have, and we are the ones to try to make those connecting dots to get them out into the world and see what's out there and feel what's out there, become an ambassador of the outdoors and be that awareness, that conservationist and everything like that.
And so, that it matters. That's amazing. And doing this all for nothing, you have partnered up with a lot of groups to help make this happen. Then it's not, you're not just, you know, doing this with no money.
right. So, it's a lot of relationship builds, you know. It's over a course of time. It started out with I got a pretty decent back pay from the military for my disability.
So you just used your own money.
I used my own money.
Going.
I took everything I had and I put that into my passion, and I started to march. And that's how I started marching.
Wow.
And sooner or later, what I did was I built a portfolio of the deployments that I was doing and showing the engagement of us connecting with youth. My immediate...
So you were doing this totally with your own money. You were getting...
Yes.
Finding kids and vets and just taking them out on
absolutely.
Trips yourself.
Absolutely.
Wow, Chad.
Absolutely.
That's great.
And eventually, I started to have the opportunity to partner with U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Ah.
And they came on board and start seeing that engagement, and they became a strong partner to help me out financially to push Soul River Inc. a little bit much more further. Sooner or later, Soul River got to a point where my pockets started getting empty.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a perfect timing, you know, and everything like that. And then I started connecting with other, nonprofit groups and non-government agencies, basically.
I know. I've got this list that's like surreal. It's like, where is this list? It's like, if I can find it here. Anyway, it just seemed like just list off. Oh, yeah. Sea Run Pursuits, Emergent Expeditions, Oregon Museum of Industry and Science, or Science and Industry, East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District, Urban Nature Partners, PDX. I mean, the list on. Is immense.
Yeah. You know, and that's really, that's the magic of what we do. You know, it's the community, basically. Uh-huh. You know, and we create this community amongst youth and vets, but also in that business world, there's a community of businesses, nonprofit and for profit, that believes in the mission and the march of what we're doing, basically.
And it's seeing people's lives being turned around by it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're doing a benefit with the zoo, right? Could you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's November.
That's in November?
Yes, November the 6th. We're doing our first annual gala, and it's tied in with the Oregon Zoo. And, you know, they're giving us an opportunity. They're housing the whole event inside the Oregon Zoo, which is awesome. And it's going to give us the opportunity to hopefully we can raise the money we can raise to move forward in 2017, basically. It's going to be a full dinner. It's going to be an opportunity to debut the documentary that was done in the Arctic Circle with all the youth and vets. And there's been a lot of different companies that has donated, you know, various items, et cetera, for silent auction, you know, and hopefully it'll be successful. We've been working really hard to make this work.
And
there's been like some of the youth parents is even stepping up and supporting and helping to advocate and trying to get the word out, et cetera,
right.
You know. So it's such a collective effort, you know, that from many different angles here and to try to make this gala a success, you know.
Yeah.
And this is the first gala, and it's been really an interesting walk to try to pull this one off, you know. And so we're really looking forward to November the 6th to really try to meet our goal, basically, to make this work in 2017.
Yeah, I hope that can happen. Again, we've got just the last 15 minutes, but before we do that, I want to say that I'm talking with Chad Brown, founder and president of Soul River Runs Wild and also Soul River Runs Deep, and Tyrell Hall, who was part of an expedition to Alaska. You're tuned to KBOO Radio. This is the Recovery Zone. And there's a lot of advocacy that's happening with you, one other thing I just wanted to mention, you got an award from Orvis for breaking barriers.
Yes, ma'am.
What was that about?
I was the first, angler in the industry that literally broke the barriers of the fly fishing world, basically. And that's engaging with inner city kids and veterans and doing these kind of unique things with Soul River Inc., basically.
Right.
You know, is really thinking out of the box and taking the sport of fly fishing and using it not just as, you know, just catching fish, but using it as an educational piece and bringing these worlds together, kind of like threading that together.
Right.
And Orvis, you know, they definitely acknowledged the work that, uh-huh. you know, that's been happening. And it was a blessing. And that's kind of like really what started the snowball and everything. But by them acknowledging that, and there's such an older company and older family that's been historically in the fly fishing world. And to get an acknowledgement like that was pretty amazing, you know, to see, especially. You know, I don't look like your typical fly fishing angler.
You know,
and I don't dress like you know, and so it was really rewarding to see them acknowledge that, you know.
And do you run into stuff like that? I was reading online that this is hunting. I couldn't find anything exactly on fishing, but that 94% of the hunters in America are white, 2% are black, 2% are Hispanic, and then everybody.
Right.
Do you run into racial issues when you're out there at all?
Yeah, I've ran into quite a few.
You run into like people like the Bundys.
I've my life been threatened. I've been threatened.
Wow.
Last year, my life was threatened. And the year before that, and then this year I got a really, really nasty Facebook public post from somebody in Michigan, and it was very much a hate racial type of deal, and talking about the, especially like the fly fishing is supposed like our sport, and like there goes the neighborhood, and you're taking that kind of stuff, you know. And you know, and I take it really light, and you know, I have a strong march, and a strong community.
Yeah.
You know, and I spend no time with that. I don't have time with that. I just kind of, you know, I got a mission to connect, you know, our youth and our vets. That's my
mission. And the
support
that you're getting is so overwhelming compared to that kind of thing, hopefully, right?
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. And when that guy did that post, I actually didn't even respond. Uh-huh. And I just kept on doing what I need to do. It hurt. But I kept on doing, you know.
Yeah.
But what was interesting, it was the people from all over the United States came to my defense.
Oh, great.
You know, and started speaking out and taking the stand and going after that guy,
you know,
and everything like that, you know. And so it's those things like that tells me how strong the community is out there that supports the mission of Soul River, Inc.
Great. And then also politically, like there's something that you're working with to start, what is it called, red tape? Where was that here? Trying to get the red tape out of the refuges.
Sure.
Could you talk a little about that? That's something, because you're trying to get more people into the wilderness, basically,
right? Yeah, absolutely. The whole red tape is actually birthed from Senator Wyden's team, basically.
Uh-huh.
And so I was pulled in to help out and to help advocate that, basically. And simple, the No Red Tape Act is all about lessening permitting, etc., for people to pursue the outdoors, basically, you know, and it's trying to open the gates, basically.
But not like a Malheur Bundy refuge.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's more like with a lot of respect for it.
Yeah. It totally. It's more like if Tyrell wanted to go fishing, back in the day, there may be some red tape that he has to go through in order to go fishing to get the right license, etc. And now it's much more streamlined, so it's not.
So they did pass this.
I think they're still working on that. They're still working on it right now. Yeah.
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 But to streamline things and make them happen.
Exactly.
And you've been, part of what you've been doing with these things is you're not just like going to the Oahu, you're going to Washington, D.C. sometimes, right? To testify and
I am. That's kind of like behind the scenes. I do a lot of advocate work with a couple organizations, especially in the whole conservation realm. Was in Oahu, you know, and that was really all about fighting to help support President Obama to turn that into a monument, basically, and protect the wild,
right.
and keep it wild,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah.
Just recently, well, actually 2 days ago, I was asked to support a letter that was sent to President Obama to keep the Arctic as a monument, to help establish the Arctic peace as a monument as well, you know. And so I'm kind of pulled in many different areas of conservation worlds, basically, of groups that are fighting, basically. And I'm definitely a believer in our public lands and our fresh water, our wild fish and wild animals, keep it wild, you know, and respect nature, basically, and preserve that for tomorrow, for our next generation, basically, you know. And so I do a lot of that kind of advocate work outside of Soul River, Inc.
Yeah. And then, like I've mentioned, that you also have Soul River Runs Wild, which is, it sounds like a whole lot of doing, you know, you're getting all these people together.
It is.
You're late to radio shows.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, Soul River Runs Deep is a whole nother thing that you're doing, which is a store that you have in the Kensington neighborhood.
Yes, it's a shop.
Yeah.
It's a boutique shop, and it's kind of like a mix of our urban outdoor, mixed with the art and design and fly fishing.
Right.
You know, and
you're designing some of the stuff that you sell in that store. And
I am.
Yeah.
Yes.
How do you do all this?
I don't sleep. You know, but what I'm hoping for is Tyrell and some
there
of the
you
youth,
go, Tyrell.
You know, to take the torch and keep moving. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And you sort of see yourself in that role, Tyrell.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you do. How old are you?
I'm 16.
You're 16. So how many years of school do you have left?
I have this year, next year for high school, and then I have all of college.
All of college. Do you figure out where you're going to go?
I'm thinking about Cornell.
Wow.
It has a really good ornithology program.
Yeah.
But also I'm thinking about Oregon State because it has a really good biology program.
Cool. Yeah. So, and then you're gonna carry on with the efforts here.
Yes.
It's cool. And so one other bit here with the politics, One last thing. Have you ever heard of a guy named David James Duncan? He's somebody you have to hear about him. He's written some beautiful, funny books. He's an old Oregonian.
And I have to look for it. Yeah,
he's written The River Y and The Brothers K.
Oh, The River Y. I'm sorry.
So the whole aspect of it being spiritual, you know, is like something that I first sort of got a hold of when I read him. And I just to sort of get a sense of like it's not just something to do because it's economically good or something like that. This is like saving these birds or saving these fish. It's something much deeper that connects us as humans to our planet, isn't it?
It is. You know, and to speak a little bit what you're talking about, you know, to kind of like backpedal a little bit. It also, to me, you know, as a vet and using the river as my healing process, it has got me to a point of understanding that it's also about getting our youth and our vets, when we are fighting with our issues, to start learning how to relove ourselves. In order to love the environment, you got to love yourself first, basically. You got to be healthy first, right? You got to be spiritually connected and et cetera. And some of us kind of, you know, are coming from all different kind of walks of life,
right?
And especially vets, into where our spirit is torn or et cetera, you know. But when we start to kind of grow and build that community into that family, there's this love that starts to happen and starts to heal us. And then from that piece, we start to have that love for our environment and the love for our rivers, et cetera, you know, become ambassadors, because now we actually make that connections. Like, the reason why I'm feeling this good is because this is happening with me, you know.
Right.
You can make those kind of connection dots, you know, and it's a process that goes both ways, but yes, yeah.
So, and you learn things like even like learning about rhythm and things like that, it sounds like, when you're out there, like just reading the river and things like this that are just very rich, you know.
Everything out there, it's rich, it's educational, and that inner intertwine of healing is all interlaced with that piece, you know. When you're out there, you're learning, but at the same time, you're receiving a new connection, basically, of what nature is showing to you and how she is teaching you, basically. It's causing you to slow down a little bit. It's causing you to breathe.
Like Tyrell was talking about being in Alaska, and he couldn't get in touch with cell phones. Or, you know, and it was good.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So you just, it's a kind of slowing and really just being much more than doing.
Yeah, being like in the present.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I think the Arctic is, you know, that was everybody's first. And I'm always bringing the Arctic because it was just like, that was intense. You know, I mean, it was a really intense expedition. And it's a beautiful, gorgeous place, but it's so very, the environment's very unforgiving. I mean,
cold.
It was cold. It was beautiful. It was, yeah. What do you think, Tyrell?
It was ancient.
Yeah.
And
that's
just
a good word.
Like you couldn't just sort of, it brought you to yourself in a way. I mean, I'm just sort of imagining it. It was just so vivid, I guess.
Right.
Like, it put you in touch with life in a way. Yeah. 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 So I think that basically it's just very important that all of us, though, get more in touch with nature. Like one of the things I've been reading stuff about how we're missing that a lot, like just in our lives, and that somehow it robs us of a kind of our own humanity to be so in our buildings and in our cars and things like that. And I think that especially for the kids that you're working with, they don't really get that opportunity much to be in nature, do they?
Right.
Yeah.
No. And you're saying it's so valuable, that nature is a strong piece. You know, I always tell people, it's like From a Native American standpoint, you have a warrior that goes out and fight, and that warrior comes back to their tribe, and it's their community, basically, that heals that warrior. That community comes together, and they heal that warrior together. And we've been really disconnected where we don't find a lot of that happening in our society, especially when vets come back.
Right.
There's a major disconnect that's happening. You know, families don't get it. You know, best friends don't understand it, et cetera. So a lot of times we fight by ourselves in the dark. And the same thing with youth. You know, youth, they have their own issues and go through it, and sometimes their voice is not heard and everything, you know, and sometimes it may take another person on the outside of the family to help with that, basically, you know. So it's about kind of like making that community coming back together and reconnecting that community and using that community as kind of like our healing process, basically.
Right.
And that's what we need, you know. It's I say to people, especially sometimes, you never know what someone's fighting with, you know.
Right.
And sometimes it's not about you giving the answer. Sometimes it's about just giving a hug and holding us and
yeah.
letting us know that we're in the present.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so once again, you've got a benefit happening on
yes.
November 6th with the Oregon Zoo. What's your website? People can go to it and find out.
SoulRiverInc.org.
SoulRiverInc.org.
That's right.
Okay, check that out. It's got a lot of good stuff and a lot of videos and photos that are just really startling and beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Tyrell, any last?
You guys should check out Soul River.
Yeah, and get more kids going.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
So you've been hearing from Chad Brown, who founded Soul River Run Wild and Run Deep, in order to share his expertise and love of the outdoors with veterans and at-risk youth. We've also been talking to one of the team participants with Soul River, Tyrell Hall. He was able to go to Alaska this summer, and he wasn't here with his mom, but anyway, I'm Stephanie Potter, and this has been the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. Thanks to Tammy for her fine engineering, and thank you for listening.
It's noon here at KBOO, KBOO Portland. KBOO.FM on the web. It's time for Jazz Lives. Coming up in just a moment, we have some special programming going to happen at the top of the hour just between our shows, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, maybe we'll listen to a little Bill Frisell. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO today.